San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
This is Richard Muzio with It's Your Money and Your Life, and we're here with Stephen M.R. Covey. We're going to be talking about the Servant Leadership Institute event that we're very excited about that's coming up in lovely Coronado, California at the Coronado Marriott on March 9th and March 10th. Information at servantleadershipinstitute.com. But again, we have Stephen M.R. Covey on the line. Mr. Covey, welcome. Very much appreciate you being able to spend some time with us. How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm doing great, Richard. Thank you. Delighted to be with you.
Are you going to be heading from cold country out to sunny California to be at Servant Leadership Institute? Just curious.
Absolutely. That was part of the appeal. I know what it's like in March in San Diego.
Yeah, it's supposed to average temperature 72 degrees, and with all this weird weather we've been having around the country, we may have people coming to the seminar just to get away from bad weather.
Absolutely.
And there's so many good reasons to come besides that, too. So really appreciate you spending some time with us. I know you're going to be presenting in a panel presentation. I believe this is the first time in history that you and John Maxwell and Ken Blanchard are all going to be in a panel presentation at the same time. Am I correct?
Yes. I've been on a panel one time with Ken,
okay,
but never have with John. And so this will be the first time that the three of us are together on this panel. And I'm really, really delighted because those two gentlemen are some of the great thought leaders in this world on leadership and on servant leadership.
Yeah, it's going to be very exciting. And just by way of background for our listeners, you are co-founder and CEO of Covey Link Worldwide. And I know you are probably one of the most sought-after keynote speakers when it comes to subjects like leadership, ethics, trust, and how to empower people to achieve high performance. And I know your father is also very famous, Stephen R. Covey. He wrote one of the best books I ever read called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Before we get to Servant Leadership Institute, I'm just curious, how old were you when your father wrote his amazing book?
Well, he wrote it in 1989.
Okay.
So that would put me at 27.
Okay. And were you active in your father or with your father in business at that time?
I was. In fact, I had joined the former Covey Leadership Center about 6 months before we put out the 7 Habits book, and
okay,
it was a very exciting time.
Yeah, I can imagine it was. That's an amazing book.
Yeah, thank you.
And I know you are the author of a book, and this is a fascinating concept for me. You're the author of a book called The Speed of Trust. And I think it's an amazing book. I've read it. I think it really shifts somebody's paradigm about what trust really, really means as an economic driver in today's economy. Can you talk briefly about that book and what was the genesis or the thought process behind coming up with that concept? Because I think it's an amazing
concept.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you identified it, Richard. It really was trying to be a paradigm shift that trust is not just some soft, nice-to-have social virtue. I mean, it has that dimension to it. It is a social virtue. But in addition, trust is a hard-edged economic driver. And here's why. Because trust always affects the speed at which you can move and the cost of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see trust going down in relationships or on teams or in companies, when trust goes down, the speed goes down with it. Everything takes you longer to do, and the cost goes up. It costs you more. And that is a tax, a low trust tax. And, you know, think about it for our listeners. Just think when there's distrust on a team, distrust between teams or in a company or with a partner, everything takes you longer, costs you more. But the good news is the dividend is equally real, and that is when the trust goes up in those relationships, on the team, in the culture, when the trust goes up, the speed goes up with it, the cost comes down. That is a dividend, a high trust dividend, and that is equally real as well. And the data is overwhelming that shows that high trust organizations outperform low trust organizations by a multiple of about 3 times. So this trust is not just social. It's financial. It's economic. You can put a value on it.
And what are the elements that have to be in place for the speed of trust to work, or to phrase it differently, when there isn't trust, what are the three or four key components that might be missing?
Right. Here's what you're going to see when there's distrust. You're going to see low credibility, and that could come about either because there's a gap in character or a gap in competence.
Okay.
And both of those pieces are vital for trust. You got to have high character, you got to have high competence. If you lack either one of those, you won't sustain the trust. I think the character is self-evident to people that you know, a lack of character will hurt trust.
Sure.
But same with the lack of competence. See, someone could be a good person, an honest person, care about people. They could have high character, but low competence. Maybe they're not current or they're not relevant. They don't deliver. They don't perform. With such a person, I might trust them if I went on a vacation. They need someone to watch my home, right? Because
mm-hmm.
they're honest.
Mm-hmm.
But I might not trust them on the key project, the key client, the key deliverable, if they don't have a track record of performing. The lack of competence would undermine my trust. I need to see both the character and the competence. So I call that combined credibility.
Okay.
But then the second thing I would highlight would be behavior. We have to behave our way into trust. And in other words, you can't just talk about something and expect to build trust. You have to put it into action, put it into practice. It's what we do and how we do it. And we have to do what we say we're going to do and behave our way into trust.
And so what you're really talking about is how corporations, how entities, how groups, how teams can create a culture that basically elevates everybody to, shall we say, their highest level, not only them individually, but the common cause. Is that correct?
Absolutely. In fact, if you can do that, if you can create a high trust culture, that's like a rising tide that will lift every boat. Suddenly, your ability to do everything else goes up dramatically because trust is a performance multiplier. It makes you better at everything else that you need to do. And, Richard, what you've identified is that we're trying to do this collectively. We're trying to do this not just one leader, although it starts with any one leader, but if you can get enough people getting a common sense of the behaviors that build trust and then a common commitment to try to model those behaviors, and enough people do that, you will move the needle on trust inside of a team, inside of a culture. And when that happens, and there's a cultural norm towards these behaviors, and when I say behaviors, I'm talking about things like talk straight,
mm-hmm.
create transparency, keep commitments, deliver results, listen first, and so forth. Just basic common sense behaviors. There's 13 of them. If you do those things, you'll move the needle on trust. And when trust goes up, everything else goes up with it.
Yeah, I find the business world, I'm 56 years old, so I started in the business world back in 1979 as an accountant, became a CPA, and so here I am more than 35 years later. I don't want to admit that, but I just did. and for me now, the business world, I mean, obviously it's much different now than it was 35 years ago in terms of technology and how fast, forget about the speed of trust, the speed of everything moves. But the world now for me, or the business world now for me, is a much more collaborative place than it used to be when I started. It was a very competitive place. And the other difference I see is you have companies and individuals who actually view their stakeholders as being much more broad or much more vast than merely, for example, stockholders and employees and so on. It includes the community, the government, regulatory agencies, and everything and everybody that surrounds a business entity. Am I crazy when I say that, or would the speed of trust incorporate the fact that the business world is much more collaborative and there are many more stakeholders out there than just merely, for example, the stockholders of a company?
You've nailed it. It's a new environment, and the name of the game is collaboration and interdependence and partnering. And you know what? Here's the thing. Here's why the trust is so vital. It's hard to collaborate with people who you don't trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to be a partner with people you don't trust. Now, you can have a supplier and a vendor that you do transactions with, but What it's trust that turns a supplier into a true partner. It's trust that turns a group of people into a team. It's trust that turns mere coordination into true collaboration. And there's a big difference between coordination and real collaboration. That requires trust. And the nature of the world today is interdependent, based upon collaboration, and trust is the fuel that will help drive it and guide it. Now, you still have to do other things, but you need that foundational element. And then you're right about the multiple stakeholders. And clearly, organizations have evolved to where they're recognizing it's not just shareholders anymore. It's multiple stakeholders, and having that relationship of trust with the various stakeholders, with their own people, with our partners, our suppliers, distributors, with our customers, with regulators and shareholders and all these different stakeholders, those various relationships are important. And to be trusted in all of those relationships gives you a huge advantage. But it's not enough just to kind of play the dominant shareholder mm-hmm. one at the expense of the others. It's a new era of what's expected of leaders today.
You know, I think it's a very exciting time. So switching a little bit, well, not too much, but over to Servant Leadership Institute. Just curious, how did you become familiar with Servant Leadership Institute, or was it vice versa? Did they become familiar with you first?
Well, you know, I became familiar with Servant Leadership Institute and Art Barter as I worked with him some in his work at Datron. And Art had me come out, and I know he's had John and Ken do this same thing. I came out and met with his senior leadership team and presented Speed of Trust. Art's always been a big champion of trust, and what he loved about Speed of Trust is that I gave a methodology, a language, a framework, and a process to really get good at trust. So it wasn't just the concept mm-hmm. of, you know, trust is good, it's fast, and how nothing is as fast as the speed of trust. He liked that. He believed it. I gave him language for it. But then what he really connected with him is that we identified how you do it through your credibility and through your behavior, and those 13 behaviors common to high-trust leaders. So I presented with his team, and this was an important part of what they were doing. And through that process, in becoming acquainted with Art and Datron, became acquainted with Art's next phase here with the Servant Leadership Institute and seeing how Art himself was such a great servant leader. And so I was invited to participate in the conference last year and really felt this extraordinary connection between my message on Speed of Trust and servant leadership and how they're so intertwined and connected and how really, as I put it, the defining outcome of the servant leader is trust. You know, that's how you know if you're a servant leader. The answer is trust. It's the litmus test. Trust is to the servant leader what profit is to a business. Mm-hmm. It's the outcome. It's the core measure, the scorecard. And so there's such a great alignment between my core message of the speed of trust and servant leadership and then what Art is doing with the Servant Leadership Institute.
We have to move from the speed of trust to the speed of commercials. Everybody sit tight. We are going to be right back.
AM 760 KFMB.
We're back on It's Your Money and Your Life with Stephen M.R. Covey, and we're really excited about the upcoming event. So can we talk a little bit about change? I know change is a very, very difficult thing for many people. In my profession, being a CPA, it's a really difficult thing for whatever reason because we like regulations and rules and IRS codes because it's all black and white. When you run into a situation where significant change needs to occur because the direction, for example, that a company is going or that relationships are going, how hard does change become when you introduce concepts that for many people are, I would say, very, very different and new?
It can be extremely difficult. I mean, again, as part of this new environment is that change is a constant. And it's not like we're just going to get the change done and accomplished. There's always new stuff that we've got to do. It's part of the new world today. But I'll tell you what, if there's low trust to begin with, then the quality of the change you're trying to implement will be compromised.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be diluted. It will go down. It will also take you longer to try to implement the change. It will cost you more. You'll get less engagement and involvement and commitment of your people, and you'll have less fun along the way when the trust is low. But if you can implement the change in a way that inspires trust, in other words, how you do what you do makes all the difference. So you listen first, and you demonstrate respect for what you hear, and you talk straight, and you're transparent, and you clarify expectations and keep the commitments. How you do what you do makes a profound difference, and it enables us to have far greater success with the change that we're implementing, where you get a multiplier working for you instead of the destructive tax working against you. You do it faster. You do it with less cost. You get greater engagement, energy, involvement, commitment from your people. Plus, you have a lot more fun along the way. And so I see trust as a great accelerator and multiplier to change initiatives. And you can take any change initiative, and if you were implementing that in two organizations that were the same size, same industry, the only difference is one was high trust, one was low trust. If you were to play that out, you'd see different in kind outcomes. And so that's why I see trust as a great driver of the change process. And sometimes people almost look at it the other way. They say, hey, when we implement change, we lose trust.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all the more reason why they need to be focused on how they do what they do. It makes all the difference.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, even though it's somewhat counterintuitive. One of the things I think about you, you do a lot of consulting. You're, as I said, very sought-after keynote speaker. But I want to talk briefly about your business career. Unlike a lot of consultants I know, you actually are a former CEO who actually, under your direction, significantly grew the Covey Leadership Center, correct, when you took that over in your role as president and CEO?
Yes. In fact, I like to, when someone asks me, well, tell me about you and Speed of Trust, I say, you know what? My main thing is that I'm not just kind of a theory guy. I see myself as a practitioner, as a doer. I've done it. And I think that's important when you talk about a topic like trust, just the same as it is talking on the topic like servant leadership, that if sometimes people view it as soft, taking the hard-edge economic approach to it and having kind of the platform of credibility, of being a practitioner and not just a writer, that's, I think, a better platform on which to start. And so, yes, I see myself as a practitioner first and thought leader second.
Yeah, and if I'm assuming I can say this out loud because it's public information, it stated that, I guess, when your ultimate exit strategy was a merger with Franklin Quest, is that correct, that you formed Franklin Covey, if memory serves?
Yes.
And I believe that the articles I read about that said that that was about a $150 or $160 million transaction, where I'm not sure what the company was worth when you took it over, but probably less than $10 million, right?
Yes, that's accurate. It was worth just $2.4 million.
$2.4, okay.
And we turned it into organization worth $160 million.
Well, you're a consultant that I would want to talk to if I'm trying to grow my company. That's for darn sure. So you're going to be one of the keynote speakers at Servant Leadership Institute, correct?
Absolutely. I'm really honored to be invited to speak. I spoke there a year ago. I felt a real connection with the audience and with the servant leadership message, tying trust to it, and honored to be coming back and having a chance to speak again, as well as participating in the panel with Ken and John and Art.
And here's my last big question. If this one is asking you too much about predicting the future, you've seen a lot during your very successful business career, both as a CEO as well as a writer and keynote speaker and consultant. But if you looked at the business world today and say tried to look out, say 10 years from now, Do you think Servant Leadership Institute is going to become the pervasive way of doing things? Or I mean, how do you see the future, say, 10 years from now or one generation removed from you?
Yes. I think there's no question that we're going to see trends towards that. I still think that we'll see a lot of traditional type of stuff going on. I don't think it's going to be all one or the other. Mm-hmm. It's just like these transitions always take a little bit longer than you think. You think that we'd have more authentic leadership type approaches today than we do, but there's the command and control style is still deeply rooted.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the nature of the world changing, like we described earlier, where it's moved from control to collaboration,
mm-hmm.
the fact that we've moved from kind of one primary stakeholder to multiple stakeholders, as we talked about, and the fact that the new leaders coming up and recognizing there's a better way to lead, people like Tony Hsieh of Zappos.com, mm-hmm.
sure.
that are all about, you know, creating happiness for their customers and for their own people, and they really have a servant leader's heart and mindset, that there's no question that when people see more and more companies and organizations that are doing great things, getting great results, and doing it in a way that inspires the trust and that serves the people, that people are going to say, hey, this is not just a nice idea that's, you know, it's something that is a good thing to do. But this is an economic thing to do,
mm-hmm.
and you get good results. And where we'll be in 10 years, I don't know, other than I think we're clearly going to be moving in that direction, and you'll see far more of this type of approach than you do today. And I think as it relates to trust, and again, trust is so connected to servant leadership, I think you'll see a similar thing. I think just like 15 years ago, hardly anyone measured employee engagement.
Right.
Today, almost everyone is measuring employee engagement. I think you'll see a similar thing with trust. Today, very few are truly systematically measuring trust with all their stakeholders. But I predict 15 years from now, they will be. And almost like you saw with engagement, it will be that prevalent where people are recognizing the value of this is so significant. And I think you'll see a similar trajectory towards servant leadership of recognizing that it's about your intent, it's about the motive and the agenda, and not, you know, leadership is a choice, not a position. And the positional approach versus the servant leadership approach, I think they'll become more and more differentiated. And it will be like seeing that you don't play tennis with a golf club.
Right.
The tool is not suited to the reality. And the reality now is requiring a different tool and a different style of leadership.
You know, I see two demographic phenomenon or changes. One is the millennials, they to a man or woman seem to want to be involved in business enterprises that actually are making a difference in their community or the world as opposed to just making money. And then the other one I see is, I call it the feminization of capitalism, as more and more women have entered the workforce and grown into positions of leadership. Women tend to resolve issues and conflict and change differently than men do. You know, men just go outside and slug it out, whereas women tend to be more collaborative by nature, I think, not to, you know, make any stereotypes, certainly. But I think these two, I would say demographic changes, I think certainly lead to servant leadership as becoming more and more relevant in the future. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think the combination of those trends and the others we've talked about all play towards this becoming a more relevant approach to leading teams and organizations. There's no question about it.
Mr. Covey, really appreciate your time again. For our listeners, servantleadershipinstitute.com, Coronado, the beautiful Coronado Marriott Hotel. In fact, I interviewed Debbie Marriott Harrison. She's in charge of corporate culture there.
Uh-huh.
So keeping it in the family in terms of where we're staying.
Uh-huh.
March 9th and 10th in Coronado, California, where the average temperature in March is 72 degrees. Everybody needs to be there. So anyway, Mr. Covey, really appreciate your time. Can't thank you enough for being with us. Thank you so much.
Certainly, Richard. Thank you. Delighted to be on this session together, and I really look forward to seeing people on March 9th.
We'll see you out there. Thanks again.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.